I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday. The many satellite trucks are lined up on 4th near Juneau in Milwaukee. It's a few blocks from our location as Republican candidates conduct their fourth debate. Eight candidates will debate at 8 o'clock and four calling... They're being called the undercards. I don't know where that word came from, but we'll find out. They'll be debating at 6 o'clock. This one is hosted by Fox Business Network and the Wall Street Journal, and it will take place at the Milwaukee Theater. We'll have three guests with us during the course of this hour to talk about the debate, the moderators, the candidates who will be facing tough scrutiny tonight. I would imagine Ben Carson will be, and perhaps Marco Rubio as well. And we'll also be looking at the seat of Wisconsin, why Milwaukee was selected for this debate. And Wisconsin has a pretty interesting political recent history, too, which we'll be discussing. We have three guests with us during the course of this hour. They'll be coming and going. Brian Stelter is host of Reliable Sources, which examines the week's top media stories every Sunday on CNN, and he's the senior media correspondent for CNN Worldwide. He was media reporter for the New York Times, and when he was a freshman in college, this is amazing, he created and later sold TV Newser, which is a blog dedicated to coverage of the television news industry. He's the author of the New York Times best-selling book, Top of the Morning, Inside the Cutthroat World of Morning TV, and we thank you very much, Brian, for joining us. Welcome to Milwaukee.
Thank you.
And Francisca Chambers is with us. We told her last time she was here for All Things Political, come on to the station and we'll have a cup of coffee for you. And little did we know that she would come on to the station today and join our panel. She is the Daily Mail's White House correspondent. She was previously a contributor to the Washington Examiner. She's appeared on ABC's Nightline, PBS's NewsHour, MSNBC, CNN, Huffington Post Live, and many other news outlets. Francesca, very nice to meet you in person. Thank you.
And your listeners can't see it, but you did have coffee waiting for me.
I know,
so thank you for that.
We heard you were coming and we put the pot on. Thanks for being with us. Craig Gilbert will join us a little bit later in the hour. Craig, of course, a regular guest on this show, political reporter, and he is the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, writes the Wisconsin Voter blog about politics and elections. He was up early this morning at a breakfast for the conducted by the Wall Street Journal. And he will talk about Wisconsin and Scott Walker and Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. He's been spending time with them during the past couple days. And we'll be welcoming phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show. Brian, let's start with you. I don't quite know why this is the case, but you will. Audiences for these debates ranging from 14 million to 24 million people, and it's not all that easy to get.
No, and the Fox Business Network in particular isn't even available in every home that has cable. It'll be live streamed online tonight for people who can't find it on TV. But in a word or in a name, it's Donald Trump. Donald Trump is causing extraordinary high levels of viewership of these debates. In 2011, we would have seen 2 or 3 or 4 or maybe 5 million viewers tonight. Instead, we will at least have 10 million for this debate and could be higher. Like you mentioned, 24 million was the high watermark for the Fox debate back in August. Donald Trump's not the only reason, but Trump is a big reason.
Why? Why do we want to watch him continually?
I think it's people who never would have watched debates otherwise, but are intrigued by him, are fascinated by him, are horrified by him, are excited by him. All of the above, all of those emotions, no matter what it is, he's a reason to tune in. He's encouraging more people to care about the political process 364 days before Election Day in a way that we haven't seen before. And that's not just true on the Republican side. It's also true on the Democratic side. The ratings for the Democratic debate were much, much higher than they would have been back in 2007 or 2011. And I think Trump is partly to be credited for that. Now, we'd also say it's Hillary Clinton. She's a huge celebrity. So on the Democratic side, that has a big appeal. We even saw for the MSNBC forum on Friday, a couple million viewers tuned in for that. But Donald Trump is the reason why Fox is able to charge $175,000 for an ad tonight. Normally, you could buy some airtime for a couple thousand dollars on Fox Business. No, tonight, $175,000.
Wow, amazing. Let's talk about Ben Carson for a moment. We spent some time yesterday talking about him, Francesca. I would imagine he's going to face a lot of scrutiny tonight, if not from the moderators, then probably from Donald Trump or some of the other panelists. Do you think we will get to the bottom, and are all of you working on getting to the bottom as to what his real life has been?
Well, you know, it's not just the other debaters that he'll face scrutiny from. I think also in the spin room afterwards, he's going to face a lot of scrutiny from reporters as well. And, you know, the thing is, he's raised a lot of money off of all of the attacks that have been made on him over his life story, or at least he feels like they're attacks and he feels that they're unfair. But he raised $3.5 million off of that, you know, and now they're actually fundraising off of this reporting. So this hasn't been entirely bad for Ben Carson. It's actually raised his profile quite significantly. Now, instead of just tuning into the debate to see what Donald Trump has to say about everybody, I do think some people are going to be tuning in the debate to listen to Ben Carson explain some of these inconsistencies.
Yeah. And what about Marco Rubio? Is this story over about the credit card expenses from the card he was given by the RNC?
I think the conventional wisdom is that it was not much of a story.
Really?
And that the press, at least, has moved on. Carson seems like a bigger story to the political press. And I asked Maria Bartiromo, one of the moderators tonight, if we'll be hearing about Carson's life stories. Even though this is supposed to be an economic debate, she said it'll definitely be coming up. She said it's one of the elephants in the room, so it has to come up.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how this is designed tonight and how it was decided that there would be 8 candidates and then 4 candidates who are debating at 6 o'clock. What was the criteria that Fox Business Network used?
They've raised the bar a little bit, haven't they? The poll numbers, you had to be doing a little better to make this stage than you did last time. That's why Mike Huckabee and Chris Christie are on the junior varsity stage at 6 p.m. local time, as opposed to on the main stage later in the evening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I actually just talked to the Republican National Committee Chief Reince Priebus about this, and he was defending the network, saying that, you know, they set out the criteria, they had to follow it, they partially had to follow it as far as it's concerned because of the Federal Election Commission, and they were trying to follow those rules once they already set them out there, you know. And he said that, you know, he feels that the winnowing process will handle itself, and that you'll start to see some of these candidates drop out in February and March, not because of the debate and because of the certain criteria, but because of the run out of money. He said money's going to be the biggest factor. There's not enough money to go around for everybody. But as far as, you know, the debates and the criteria are, he doesn't think that's why people will drop out.
These debates are a bit like the opposite of limbo, right? Limbo, you bring the stick down. Well, in this case, you're bringing it up a little bit every time. So the standards are going a little bit higher every time in order to get on that main stage. I think it'll be better for viewers to have 8 candidates as opposed to 10.
Yes.
10 or 11 is unwieldy. There was maybe no way around it in August and September, but it's better for the audience, probably better for the moderators, and maybe even better for the candidates to have fewer people up there tonight.
Yeah. I really liked, I don't know what the ratings were and probably nowhere near what we're going to see tonight, but I did like the format that Rachel Maddow used for the Democratic candidates, that it was a half hour and you really got to know people a little better. And I thought, I wonder if the Republicans would think about that. 8 candidates, you could do 8, a half hour for everybody. Wouldn't we learn more, Francesca?
I don't know. I don't think the candidates at the MSNBC forum necessarily liked like the icebreaker questions where they had to, you know, they had to pull out an envelope. But yeah. I actually thought those were really interesting, and you did get to learn about the candidates. You know, Hillary Clinton was asked if she's an extrovert or she's an introvert, and I thought the way that she answered that question actually does tell you a lot about her as a person. So I thought that the icebreaker questions at the CNBC debate, you know, the same way, like, you know, the thing about Carly Fiorina and her face, and she said that she was told that she had to smile, you know, more after the next debate. I thought those were all, you know, very interesting things that did, in fact, reveal a lot about the candidates.
As that forum showed, we are in this situation now where really it's a nationalized campaign thanks to television. And the Democratic Forum is an example, and tonight's debate is an example. The early voting states do feel a little less important now that these debates have increased in importance and, of course, increased in audience size.
And also increased in controversy. Are the Republican candidates, almost to a person, justified in saying that the questioners, particularly at CNBC, were not very fair, that they were out of control, that they were asked tougher questions than Democrats would have been? Do they have a point? And also, what rules have they stipulated, if any, will be in place tonight or in future debates?
I think those candidates wasted, the ones who did really speak out against the CNBC moderators, wasted a few days of the election cycle by talking about process, not policy. Now, there are a lot of days to go, so maybe it was okay to waste a few days. It's still months before Iowa, New Hampshire, and other early voting states. But I think the RNC is happy they've moved on, and I think Fox is not expecting more complaints tonight about questions or about media bias. Part of that's because Fox is the favored network of the conservative movement of the Republican Party, so it's less likely you're going to hear complaints about media bias on their stage. We all know it's an easy applause line. We all know it's an easy way to raise money, but it doesn't get the GOP candidates very far in the long run to work the refs the way they did at the CNBC debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny, when I was talking to Reince Priebus a bit ago, he said, you know, he does not expect to have the same complaints tonight, but mm-hmm. that if he does come out there and complain to reporters again, you know, I'm sure your listeners know he's originally from Wisconsin, from Kenosha. He said he will go to his home in Kenosha and he will never come out again if he has to make those same complaints tonight. As far as the candidates are concerned, though, you know, I think that their complaints actually seemed very reasonable after the last debate. Where it got a little bit out of control was after they had the big meeting and they came out with this list of demands that they wanted for the next debate. And it was quite a long list. And I think that...
Yeah, I agree. That's where they wasted time, wasted effort.
Yeah. And reading that list, that's where it became like, whoa. You know, some of the things on there about the temperature in the room, I mean, it started to look a little bit diva level. And that's where I think they went wrong.
That's why President Obama's line was so effective at the Democratic fundraiser when he said, if you can't handle the moderators, how are you going to handle China and Russia? I suspect that if we have a repeat tonight and some complaints on stage, we might hear some of the moderators bring up that Obama line. There'll also be a buzzer tonight, which might make a difference. Not only will the candidates have more time to talk, but instead of being interrupted by the moderator when their time is up, there'll be a buzzer, which may be a more effective way to manage the time. After all, these candidates only want a two-hour debate. Mm-hmm. I myself, I'd love a 3 or 4 hour debate.
I want to hear them. 4 hour debate.
I know, I'm crazy, but I'd like to hear them go at it as long as they can. More time means more questions, but realistically speaking, I know we're only going to get 2 hours. They are going to have longer answers to questions, so we'll see how many topics they actually get to.
No 4 hour debate for me.
I'm with you. Yeah, you know, I really thought that the most effective debate was on Fox. The first debate, I thought that Megyn Kelly was superb. She asked very tough questions. I thought it was a really good, solid, and you say it's from a network that's more favorable to maybe conservative candidates, but I thought it was really tough.
And that's partly why they were able to be so tough and not be attacked for it. Because it was coming out of the voices of Fox News anchors, the questions, they were pointed, they were aggressive, but they were always respectful. And they were coming from someone who all the moderators respected as well. And so in some ways, Fox is able to ask tougher questions and not be accused of bias as a result. Rachel Maddow on MSNBC might have the same benefit with Democratic candidates.
Yeah, exactly. So the forum tonight will, from what I've read from Fox Business Network, center on the economy. Maria has said that she really doesn't believe that the candidates have answered questions about job growth in this country, stimulating the economy. Will it focus on that? Should it focus on that, Francesca?
Well, they haven't really had a chance to answer some of those questions because in the first two debates, they were just introducing themselves to voters first. And I will say that some of the interpersonal arguments did take front and center. But I do believe that the economy will come up more often tonight. Now, that said, that puts the political outsiders in a little bit tougher position. Some of the, you know, politicians are a little bit more used to talking about these subjects, about taxes, about the economy. Mm. You know, Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, and Ben Carson, I do think that they'll be in a more difficult position in this particular debate, particularly Ben Carson, because at least Donald Trump and Carly Fiorina have run major businesses before, so they know what they're talking about when it comes to the economy. Ben Carson, who's a trained neurosurgeon, I do think is going to have a more difficult time convincing voters that he should run the country.
Mm-hmm. But people don't seem to care about that very much, and I'd like to explore this a little bit, that you have Donald Trump and particularly Ben Carson and Carly Fiorina, for that matter, attracting widespread enthusiasm among voters, and yet they haven't had any kind of political career. So those areas that you just mentioned, Francesca, may be difficult for them. Why are they so attracted to voters? Why are we so anti whoever's been in office?
I agree with you that's a key point. I'm not sure how much these candidates actually want to talk about policy tonight. This is supposed to be an economic policy debate. I'm not, and some of them definitely want to have that. Others may not want to have that conversation. The headlines out of the debate tomorrow morning very well may be Donald Trump's latest critiques of Ben Carson and Ben Carson's latest way of avoiding questions about his past. Partly that's on the press, because the press chooses what to make the headlines the next morning. But partly that's about a culture that right now rewards the fun and games of a debate season over the substance of a debate season. Now, some of these candidates haven't even put out detailed economic policy proposals yet. So there's not much necessarily we can compare. There's not much we can do to compare them. Hopefully, the moderators, and I think they will press for more details than we've had before, right? Because the difference between an okay debate and a great debate is when we actually learn new things about the candidates' positions, not just what they dislike about their rivals, but new information about their positions.
Well, that brings me to the point of Carly Fiorina, though. She is one of the candidates who has not put out a detailed tax plan yet. However, because she did used to run a business, and that actually is one of her, you know, stronger points as a candidate, given that she has no political experience, I do think on those subjects she will perform well, and I bet she probably does relish this sort of a debate, because she will be able to discuss the finer points of business in a way some of the politicians are unable to. She'll be able, you know, to explain how jobs are created. She'll be able to say that she has created jobs. Now, I think other candidates on stage will have some notes on how she also lost a lot of jobs when she was HP as well, but she's at least been in a position where she's, again, run a business and has that experience, where a lot of them don't have that at all. They are not able to say whether they would be able to create jobs or not.
Let's welcome phone calls. We're talking about tonight's Republican debate, which is taking place just blocks from where we are in Milwaukee. It's at the Milwaukee Theater, and a lot of press in town, of course, for the debates. We have two people from national reporters who are with us in our studio. Brian Stelter is the host of Reliable Sources. Many of you have seen, I'm sure. It looks at the week's top media stories every day on CNN, and of course the media and politics are pretty much intertwined right now in this race. So he knows his politics as well. Francesca Chambers has joined us several times on All Things Political. She is the Daily Mail's White House correspondent. She has no life other than covering debates for probably the foreseeable future. We're welcoming phone calls. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. What is it that you would like to see tonight? Do you think that Ben Carson needs to answer some questions about his past? Do you think that the candidates really do need to focus on jobs in America? And do you think that the press has been fair to the Republicans, or would you agree with some of their criticism that some of the moderators have not been very fair? We welcome your calls. 800-486-8655 is the number. Craig Gilbert will join us as the hour goes on. Craig is political reporter and the Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about tonight's Republican presidential debate taking place in Milwaukee. It will be 8 o'clock. The top eight candidates and the undercards. The reason for the undercards?
Boxing term.
Oh.
Undercard debate. I like to call it the junior varsity debate.
And Francesca, you like to call it
I like to call it the happy hour debate.
I mean, or less charitably, it is the loser's debate. Let's keep in mind Lindsey Graham was called the winner of the last undercard. And he's not even on the stage tonight. He didn't even make it in terms of the polling. Tonight, Mike Huckabee and Chris Christie are on that smaller stage for the first time. We'll see if they have any better chance.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls. Vicki in Appleton, our first caller. Hi, Vicki.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm going to switch to off the speakerphone.
All right. Thank you.
I'm calling because I find these debates less and less accessible. We don't get cable TV. Mm-hmm. We get it over the airwaves. I've been going over to a friend's house where I've been watching the debates with her for a few years. She gets the basic cable service. It isn't only the early debates were on her cable service. She needs to buy a more expensive cable service.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a valid point. You can stream it, I guess.
Yeah, so that actually is why Fox Business is going to live stream the debate online tonight. So if you have a broadband internet connection, you can watch it at foxbusiness.com. But this is an issue I've heard from other people as well. What you'll hear from CNN or Fox or CNBC is that it does cost millions of dollars to produce the debates in order to host them. So that's the reason why they're on cable, that you need to be funded. Generally speaking, the general election debates, the ones that we see in in the fall of the election cycle are broadcast on the public airwaves, but not the primary debates. Mm-hmm. It is, though, true that the next Democratic debate, the CBS debate, will be over the public airwaves on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Fantastic. CNN is more accessible. Perhaps CNN should get more debates, Brian.
Well, actually, I was thinking about this during the break. It feels like we've had so many of these GOP debates already. But actually, after tonight, it'll be a five-week break, more than a month, mm-hmm. until the next debate, because the next debate's in mid-December on CNN. Wolf Blitzer's moderating the debate in mid-December. But it's going to be a long break. So the candidates who do well tonight, they could really benefit. They're not going to get this chance mm-hmm. again for a while. The candidates who have a very bad night, they won't have a chance to make up for mm-hmm. it again for a while.
So it really shows you how important these debates are. And we're in the state of Wisconsin, where Scott Walker dropped out of the race, partially because mm-hmm. people said, analysts like you, because of his debate performance.
He had two bad debate performances, and that's why he started dropping in the polls. So to be fair about using polling as a criteria, I mean, he had bad debate performances. He dropped in the polls, and, you know, he was going to possibly be shoved into that undercard or happy hour debate and didn't want that, you know, saw that it was game over and got out of the race. You know, some of the other candidates aren't to that point yet, but they may get there soon because, like Brian just said, there will be a long gap between this debate and the next one. And then after that, you know, you have Christmas. It's not until, you know, the middle of January where they'll have another right. opportunity. They're running out of chances to convince voters in these early states that they should, you know, caucus for them, vote for them. Some of these candidates that are even on the main stage tonight barely sneaked in there, like Rand Paul. They need to have a big night. Some of the other candidates who are polling higher, Jeb Bush, you know, he's polling a little bit higher than that, but he still needs to have a big night as well if he wants to stay in it.
The mm-hmm. dynamics of the race do seem pretty cemented at this point. In June and July, there was lots of talk about whether Donald Trump was a flash in the pan, whether his bubble was going to burst. Well, it's not going to burst. He is the front runner, along with Ben Carson. Rubio is quite high on that list. Ted Cruz is quite high on that list. But the dynamics here are pretty clear. Mm-hmm. This anti-Washington, anti-politician sentiment is very, very clear. I don't see that changing between now and Iowa, New Hampshire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if either of you have read George Herbert Walker's Bush's book yet about his son's presidency and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld. You have to wonder, and I'm wondering about your thoughts about this, why it was released right now and what it does to Jeb Bush's campaign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it was particularly helpful to have released it right now. It drew attention, I think, on an aspect of the presidency, both his father and his brother, that I'm sure that Jeb wouldn't have wanted right now when he's already having a few difficulties of his own, aside from that. But you raise a good point, because originally they were going to wait to release these diaries in the book until after the death of, you know, George Bush Sr., and then they decided to beforehand.
Yeah. Do you want to respond to that?
I look at this is the Meacham book. Am I getting it right?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to read it. I haven't read it because I know it delivered from Amazon today. These things take so many years, and I don't know if there was. I don't think there was any particular reason why mm-hmm. now. But if I'm Jeb Bush, it's another challenge. It's another part of right. the currents that are out there. Another reminder of his last name when all he wants people to pay attention to is his first name.
In the 6 weeks that we don't have debates, I'm looking forward to reading it.
There we go. There we go.
It is strange, isn't it? Because not that long ago, it was just a given. Well, it's going to be a Bush-Clinton run, and yeah, people were thinking, yeah, it's all right, it's a Bush-Clinton run. And look what's happened here. It's just remarkable, isn't it, how he's really struggling.
It goes to show how little the talking heads really know, how little the political strategists really know, and that's why it is so interesting to pay attention to. That's why it's not just fun, but also interesting and informative.
But yeah. I don't know that anyone could have realistically, including Jeb Bush, and I said this last week and I'll say it again, I don't know that he could have predicted that Donald Trump was actually going to get in this race. Hmm. And more importantly, that Donald Trump was going to have the kind of impact on the race that he has. I think not just the political pundits, but I think the candidates who are running, the contenders, you know, thought that it would be a flash in the pan as well, mm-hmm. too, that people would see this, you know, kind of as a circus act, you know, that this isn't the Apprentice, you know, as some of them have said, and those attacks have not stuck to him.
No.
But I don't know that they could have predicted that he would be as popular that he is or even get in the race at all.
Absolutely. And of course, we are coming a couple of days after Trump on SNL.
Right.
We've never seen a presidential candidate host SNL before. And I'm sure some of the other candidates are going to use that as an attack line tonight. I'm sure they'll bring up the fact that he was off the campaign trail, working the television trail instead for a few days. But as history's any guide, those attacks don't tend to work.
And if I may for a second,
well,
I think, you know, I just want to play off that and note that this would be a great opening for Ben Carson. You know, he's under attack right now. He said that he would not do Saturday Night Live because he thinks this is a serious election, that, you know, that's not a serious show that he thinks he should be doing. So that seems like a good line of attack for him to come back at Donald Trump with tonight.
What if he got paid $40 million?
Well, as Donald Trump said, you know, Ben Carson didn't get invited because he doesn't have the type of ratings that, that the Donald would bring in, which were huge, as you might have heard.
All of this, of course, emblematic of the civil war within the Republican Party. You know, and that's why the debate, at the end of the day, that's why it matters, because we get to actually see these intra-party battles play out in real time. There's a Donald Trump wing, there's a Ben Carson wing, there's a much more establishment wing, and we rarely get to see the fights actually occur, the debates actually occur, except on these stages every few weeks.
Craig Gilbert is also joining us now. Let me know when anybody has to go. I know that it's a busy day for you, so Brian, when you have to leave, we want to keep you as long as possible, but just so you have to go. And Francesca, you're staying with us for the hour. Craig Gilbert has been with us many times before. He's a political reporter and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief. He writes the Wisconsin Voter blog about politics and elections, and he's a very, very keen political analyst. We appreciate his writing here in Wisconsin all the time. Craig, hello. You've been up since, you've been going to breakfast at the Wall Street Journal Breakfast Club.
24/7.
Wait a second. Is your mic on here? Yeah? Are you there?
Can you hear
talk?
Me?
I know I can't hear you very well, so let's get this figured out. Da-da-da. We just need to figure it out.
How's that?
There we go.
Okay.
No. Why don't you move? Yeah, let's use Francesca's mic.
We can share.
Great. That's good. So you've done a lot of writing. Let's talk about Wisconsin for a moment. Wisconsin epitomizes, you wrote recently, the political strengths and weaknesses of today's Republican Party. How so?
Well, we've seen this pattern in recent election cycles where Democrats do better in presidential ballots and Republicans do better in midterm and off-year elections because of the nature of turnout. The turnouts are bigger, more diverse, and more liberal, generally speaking, in presidential years. And Wisconsin, this pattern has been really, really pronounced. In fact, it even goes back farther than just the last 4 or 5 or 6 years. Scott Walker winning for governor, yet a Republican Party, on the one hand, that completely dominates state government, that holds most of the House seats, has a lock on the legislature, yet has lost 7 straight presidential elections and hasn't won a Senate seat in a presidential year since 1980. It's a big mountain for the Republicans to climb right now. So as successful as they are, and they really are a showcase for the Republican Party, I mean, Paul Ryan, Reince Priebus, Scott Walker.
I know.
They are, kind of fighting a great deal of futility in presidential years, and we've got one coming up.
Yeah. Scott Walker was with Jeb Bush yesterday at a choice school in Waukesha. Evidently, he's been with Marco Rubio as well, but said he's not going to endorse anybody. Does it make a difference to the other candidates, his endorsement, or not, Craig?
At this point, I'm not so sure. I mean, he still commands the loyalty of a Republican base. But even when he was still in the race, you know, the last sort of good poll that was done when he was still in the race, I think he was at 25%. Among kind of self-identified Republicans and Republican leaners. So, you know, that left a huge percentage or majority of Republican voters looking elsewhere. And so when you think about the impact of an endorsement under those conditions, I don't think it's decisive. But and also the main thing about the Wisconsin primary is that it comes very late. And it's really going to be a function of whether we still have a race by then. If we do, it could matter a lot because it stands out there all by itself, you know, in about a 3 or 4 week period. It's really the biggest contest. And so, it's very late in the process.
Yeah. I'm interested in both what Brian and Francesca think about Wisconsin. I don't know how many times you've been here, but have you been following what's going on in this state, and does it have national implications at some point as we go through this presidential election season?
I have a lot of relatives who grew up here, so nice to be home in a way. And I think what I've learned from Wisconsin politics in the past number of years is about the labor movement, about the relative strength or not of the labor movement. Obviously, Bernie Sanders is the one most closely identified with that on the national level right now in the presidential race. But to me, I learned a lot about labor politics from what happened here.
Mm-hmm. Francesca? Have you been here before?
No, this is actually my first time in Wisconsin.
Lovely place, isn't it?
No, it's lovely. Yeah. I love Milwaukee.
Have you had cheese curds yet?
well, not since I've been in town here, but in Iowa, I've had cheese curds a couple times.
I had right to it last night. Is that the right food, though? Is there a better food that I should be trying?
That's correct.
In Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, there's lots of options.
I can't believe we're talking about food.
I think a cheese curd is more as a rural Wisconsin thing.
Oh,
And you have to be fresh or else they're not really worth eating. And it's hard to get fresh cheese curds in Milwaukee.
Fresh, but I apologize for the tangent.
Well, I'm a big foodie, and so I appreciate the tangent very much. Whenever I'm in a new place like this, I do love to go and try the food as well when I'm here. So thank you for that.
And tonight, Craig, the focus is supposed to be on jobs. I asked both our other people here if there has been enough conversation about jobs. Mayor Barrett, the mayor of Oak Creek, and the mayor of Waukesha also had a letter that was published in today's Journal Sentinel asking, and they're, you know, of different political persuasions, asking very pointed questions about what are you going to do about entrepreneurship and job growth?
Right. So, and in talking to the two Fox Business anchors who are going to be moderating the debate, Maria Bartiromo and Neil Cavuto, I mean, they've very publicly vowed to, you know, make this a substantive debate that really covers this kind of economic and business policy ground, jobs, taxes, spending, jobs in particular, and also really try to mine the differences within the Republican field on those issues. I mean, which I think they argued, I think with some justification, have not been, you know, kind of teased out as much as they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's what we get, I think it should be interesting on that level.
Let's go back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. We have three guests with us now who are talking about tonight's Republican debate. Brian Stelter is the host of Reliable Sources, which examines the week's top media stories every Sunday on CNN. He was a media reporter as well at the New York Times before this job, and he is the author of a best-selling book, Top of the Morning, Inside the Cutthroat World of Morning TV. Francesca Chambers is here, has been with us for All Things Political, Daily Mail's White House correspondent, and Craig Gilbert, political reporter and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Washington Bureau chief, who writes the Wisconsin Voter blog about politics and elections. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. What do you want to hear tonight? Do you want to hear Ben Carson talk more about his life and whether or not he's being accurate about his life that he's been writing about in books? What do you think of Scott Walker? Do you think that it would behoove him to put his support behind a candidate or not? Does it make any difference? The whole state of Wisconsin, where we play in this election, and it is interesting, as Craig reminds us, how prominent we are nationally, too, with Speaker of the House and Chair of the RNC and et cetera. Lynn on Facebook said she was watching Fox News to find out what channel in the time of the debate, and all she heard was bashing of Democrats for hiding their debates on no-pay TV. She says that it took her 20 minutes to find the Fox Business Channel, so how are they being more accessible to the public?
And I can tell you the answer is 8 p.m. Central Time for the main debate, 6 p.m. for the undercard debate. It'll go for 2 hours in prime time. Fox is streaming the debate, so if you can't find it on cable, it is on foxbusiness.com. But this is a more obscure channel than the prior debates. That is definitely a challenge for this network. It's also going to be the biggest day in their history because they are very low rated usually. So they've put the debate on this channel on purpose in order to give it a big boost.
Yeah. Are the moderators, do you think, nervous? You said, I think both of you, some of you have talked to the moderators at the debate. Is Maria concerned? Because somebody said, you know, it could be the worst job in America right now to be a moderator of one of these debates.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a little nervous. I mean, I think, you know, she didn't sound like she was agonizing over it, but you have to, I mean, you're under so much scrutiny on lots of different levels. I mean, you're under scrutiny for Obviously, there's a lot of pushback from the candidates, like we saw with the CNBC debate. So you're getting pushed from that direction, but you're also under scrutiny from your peers, and you know they're going to be critiqued. You know, did they deliver? Okay, let's say they deliver a substantive debate. Did they deliver an interesting debate?
Mm-hmm.
Did they deliver a respectful debate? Okay, it was respectful, but was it tough? Was it challenging? I mean, so it's a, you know, you're always trying to strike a balance, and they're trying to strike a balance, and they've also are trying to live up now to the kind of markers they've laid down about what kind of debate it's going to be.
Who is it that said that all of life is tone? Ultimately, this is about tone for the moderators. They can ask the hardest, most probing questions out there as long as they sound respectful and seem respectful to the people that are their guests. Eventually, the candidates, in a way, are the guests of the moderators. And I actually have no doubt that Marita Bartiromo, Neil
Cavuto, Drew
Rebecca are going to do that. They've done this many, many times before. Fox has a lot riding on this. They've had a lot of time to practice this, and they want to be the anti-CNBC debate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it shouldn't be that hard to get the tone right. I mean, like Brian said, I mean, it's just a matter of taking the snark out of it, and if you can frame it in a substantive way and frame it in a respectful way, I mean, some of the debates we've been getting some of the questions, you know, we've been getting off and on at debates are kind of ridiculous. I mean, like the classic, you know, you're at 1% in the polls. Why are you even on the stage? And why we should be listening to you? I mean,
when
that's sort of like
drop out.
When are you going to drop out? That's. I mean, it's just, what's the point?
One day my dream will come true, and we're going to have the Republican news anchors interrogate the Democrat candidates, and one day we're going to have the Democratic-leaning anchors interrogate the Republicans. But until then, I think the Fox moderators will have a good time tonight.
So was this just a wacky idea to have Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity? I don't know, it might be kind of interesting, but
it's Ted Cruz, I think, who brought that up recently.
Yes, he did.
And although we won't have Rush Limbaugh moderating one, there is going to be a conservative media grassroots debate
in January.
Oh, there is. It's still in the works. It's probably going to be at Liberty University, and it will have a panel of expressly conservative moderators. So we'll see what a difference, if any, that actually makes.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think it's a terrible idea, you know, but I think we discussed this recently as well, that even Republicans and within the conservative movement, there are still biases against certain candidates. There are still radio hosts and TV show hosts that are going to be harder on one candidate from one wing of the party versus another. So I don't necessarily agree that that's the way to solve it. I think that they might find that some people within their own party are going to be harder on them than maybe even some of the liberal commentators, because they don't want to see someone get the nomination who they don't think can win.
Yeah, in fact, at the CPAC conference earlier this year, there was a classic example of that where they mixed up the format. This is this big conservative gathering of activists annually in Washington, D.C., and so some of the Republican candidates were questioned by Sean Hannity, and some of them were questioned by Laura Ingraham. And, you know, Sean Hannity, it was softballs.
Really?
And the poor candidates that got questioned by Laura Ingraham, you know, it was a little bit more brutal. And so you're right. I mean, you can't just depend on the sort of conservative fellow travelers to go easy on these candidates, A, because they have different opinions about, you know, who they like and who they don't like and where the party should go and where the conservative movement should go, but also just big personality differences, style differences.
Yeah. So let me ask each of you, because you'll be watching this intently tonight. For me, I really do want to hear Ben Carson talk about, I want to know the truth about Ben Carson's life. You know, that's what, I don't know how you find it, but I wish somebody would find the truth about him. What do you hope to learn tonight? What would you press the candidates on? And if you ran into him, you know, outside our studios here, what would you question him on?
Well, I think the things that I would question them on again in the spin room are probably going to be a little bit different than what I do hope comes up during the debate. I'd be lying if I said that I'm going to walk up to them in that spin room and ask them, what are your plans for Social Security and Medicare and the retirement system? That's not usually the first thing I would ask. I probably would ask about Ben Carson's inconsistencies in his life story. But on the debate stage, you know, a lot of callers have said that they would like to hear more about their economic proposals, about their tax plans, about what they would do for the country. And that's actually what I would like to hear tonight as well.
Brian?
I would ask Carson if he understands the role of the Fourth Estate, because that's what we're doing. What we see journalists at CNN and elsewhere doing are doing their jobs by looking into his past, by scrutinizing his record. He says he hasn't seen this kind of scrutiny before. He says that he hasn't seen this level of vetting on other candidates. Well, it has happened. Just because he didn't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And I would press him to see if he truly understands what the role of journalism is. It's not supposed to be pleasant, and it's not supposed to be comfortable, and he's not supposed to necessarily like all of us as we're doing it. But I think the last few days, it's been surprising to hear how uncomfortable he's been with this very normal vetting process. And by the way, there's more to come of it,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah. It's a whole year.
The press is not done vetting Ben Carson, even if he'd like to pretend like he's going to move on from it.
Yeah, Craig?
Well, those are all great questions. I do think in Carson's case that's important. I'm not sure that the debate is the sort of best forum for teasing out the accuracy of his memoirs, just because there's eight candidates on stage.
Right.
I would like to find out. I would like to hear a lot about what the kind of fault lines are within the Republican field when it comes to, I mean, they're all going to agree on cutting taxes, but there are some disagreements about, you know, the progressivity of the tax system. There's some disagreements about mm-hmm. economic inequality. There's some disagreements about kind of economic, how do you get economic growth. And so there are some interesting kind of fault lines among conservatives generally and Republicans generally when it comes to these bread and butter economic issues. And I'd like to see that be defined in this debate.
All right, let's go to Glenn in Blue Mounds. Hi, Glenn.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks, Kathleen, for taking my call.
Sure.
And hello to everyone else. I had a quick comment. Since Trump and Carson and, well, amongst others, think that there's no experience necessary to be president, why doesn't Trump start doing brain surgery and Carson manage casinos for a year, take turns? Because obviously it doesn't take any experience to be a brain surgeon either, you know, if you use the same logic. So, in other words, yes, it does take experience to be president, just like it takes experience to be a brain surgeon. Now, I guess Trump probably could figure it out. But so, it's one of those things, if they use that logic, let's take it to the far extreme and say, well...
Right. And,
those things don't take any experience
yeah.
either.
So who's your guy or gal?
You.
Oh, Glenn, you're going to hang up?
Go
who's,
ahead.
Who's your guy or gal?
Oh, in the Republicans?
No, anywhere. Are you supporting somebody?
Any of them, let's put it that way.
Any of all of them?
Yeah. Well, on that side of the coin.
You're not going to answer me?
Well, it'll be somewhere in the Democratic thing, but I think Bernie Sanders has still got my vote.
All right. Thanks, Glenn, very much for the call.
Bye.
Yeah, thanks. Let's go to Pat in Milwaukee. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I just would like to know how we're supposed to trust that Bernie Sanders can keep his temper underground when I saw it flaring up again on one of the TV clips the other day. And
Bernie Sanders?
He should know
oh,
that.
Oh, Ben Carson. You said Bernie Sanders. You mean?
I didn't mean Bernie Sanders. I meant Ben Carson.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
And... I just don't trust that he can keep his temper underground.
Do you see a big temper with him?
That was really the first time that I had seen it, was when he had that very controversial interview, you know, on CNN. I hadn't really seen that. I've been covering him a lot on the campaign trail. He's usually very quiet. That's why, actually, the things in his book were so surprising, because, you know, if for folks who've been covering him a lot on the campaign trail, that's just not the kind of attitude that we're used to seeing from him.
Well, tonight will be the test, because we're going to see whether the moderators likely will bring up this issue of his stories, but more importantly, the other candidates probably will. So how Trump goes after Carson about his past, how other candidates bring up Carson's past will be a real test for Carson. How much does he want to respond? Remember, they get longer time to rebuttals. They get up to a minute just to respond when they're attacked. That's a lot longer than in past debates, so we'll see what candidates do with that time.
Yeah. Let's pause for a moment. We'll return and take more phone calls. 800-486-8655. We're talking about tonight's Republican presidential debate taking place in Milwaukee. Just a few blocks from here, Craig Gilbert is with us, political reporter and Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Washington Bureau Chief, Francesca Chambers, Daily Mail's White House correspondent, and Brian Stelter, host of Reliable Sources, which examines the week's top media stories every Sunday on CNN. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Jim in Rice Lake is next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, good afternoon, Kathleen. I mean, with a caveat that one of my great heroes, Bobby Kennedy, once said that 6 months is a lifetime in politics, and it's two lifetimes of the general election. Nonetheless, tactically, don't you think that Marco Rubio might be the strongest Republican candidate, given the importance of the Hispanic vote in probably determining the outcome of the general election. I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank
I'll
you.
I'll let you hear your comment.
Thank you. Craig?
Well, I mean, there are some people that think so. And I don't know if it's all about the Hispanic vote either. I mean, there's a lot of been a lot of discussion over how Marco Rubio will perform with Hispanic voters in general. I mean, he's Cuban-American. Most Hispanic voters in the country are not Cuban-American. There is, you know, there are, he is certainly more conservative than most Hispanic voters in the country. But there's also the generational thing. There's also just his skills as a candidate. So, you know, there is a lot of kind of, quote, smart money, unquote, in the political world on him emerging as the nominee for that reason. But some of the, you know, one of the assumptions behind that thinking is that Ben Carson and Donald Trump can't be nominated. And it's not clear that's true either.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Ben Carson.
Wait a second, Francesca. Okay.
Oh,
you're
on. Speaking
now.
of yeah. Ben Carson, you know, on the flip side of that, Ben Carson is African American. That's obviously a large demographic that the Republican Party has had troubles tapping into, and not just because of Barack Obama. They had troubles a long time before that tapping into that specific demographic. So perhaps, you know, smart money, quote unquote, would say that, you know, maybe Ben Carson's your guy. But at the same time, you know, someone we haven't talked about very much is Ted Cruz. He's also Cuban American as well. So, you know, he's another person to look at if that's what if that's part of what your consideration is.
So what about this, being the youngest person in the room, Francesca? Take on this generational divide thing. Does it make a difference, do you think, to young people or to anybody in this country how old a presidential candidate is? Does it, is youth a sign of vigor and being able to do this incredibly difficult job better?
Well, I think for a lot of young people, it has to do with if they connect with young people, if they think that they're going to pursue policies that will benefit young people. I think a lot of young people are concerned about their student loans, their college debt, for instance. Mm-hmm. And so I think their ears prick up when they hear candidates who talk about that. But at the same time, you know, before we were just talking off air about Bernie Sanders and Larry David on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, Bernie Sanders is the oldest candidate in the race,
right.
But arguably because of the Saturday Night Live, you know, sketches that Larry David's been doing, he's become very, you know, popular as a result of that with young people. And Hillary Clinton also did Saturday Night Live. Donald Trump did Saturday Night Live as well. So there are other ways to connect with young people besides your age.
Yeah. Craig,
and
what do you think?
You know, even before the Saturday Night Live stuff, I mean, Bernie Sanders was doing better among younger voters in a lot of places, including Wisconsin on the Democratic side, than with older voters. And so, you know, that obviously has to do with his politics, not his age. I think the, you know, the age can send a signal to all voters. I mean, it's really the sort of theme of generational change and change in particular. Mm-hmm. And the degree to which, you know, in the case of someone like Marco Rubio, or in the case of Barack Obama, or in the case of Bill Clinton and Al Gore when they ran, which is the signal you're sending by having a kind of a new generation of political leaders contesting the presidency. And, you know, there are times when that's very powerful.
Yeah. Let's go to Dave is next in Wausau. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, just a quick comment about Carly, although I think she's basically irrelevant. But I think instead of getting a pass because she was in the world of business for not having a tax plan, she should be one of the first ones to have a tax plan out there.
Francesca, should she?
That she should have it, whether or
yeah,
not
she should have been one of the first ones to have a tax plan.
You know, I think she'll have an opportunity tonight to go into more detail about that. I do think, again, the fact that the debates haven't been as substantive for various reasons, you know, so far. They haven't had to go into those. But I, at the same time, because she doesn't have a tax plan out, you know, some of the other ones can kind of tick off bullet points off of the things they've already said. She won't be able to do that unless she has one that she maybe does have, but she hasn't released it yet. So it'll be interesting on the spot to see how she responds to all of those questions.
Yeah. And we go to Jim in the UP for our last comment from a listener. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are we doing today on NPR?
Excellent, Jim. How are you in the UP?
We're just fine. The weather's great. But it's interesting when we talk about both parties, Democrat, Republican, and even the new Tea Party, they just don't seem to get it. They think that the general populace, the general voters, are idiots, and most of the time they steer away from all the substantive issues. my concern isn't, I don't care about somebody being on Saturday Night Live or some of their history. I want to know how they're going to address the economy, how they're going to address jobs, what are they going to do internationally in terms of the volatility that we see out there. Those are the issues that we need to start talking about.
Craig.
Well, I mean, those are, I think there are probably a lot of voters who feel that way. And so I think, again, I think if Fox Business delivers the kind of debate they're talking about delivering, it'll strike a chord with some people. It may not get the ratings because, as we've talked about, it doesn't have the kind of habitual viewership that, you know, CNN has or one of the networks has. But, you know, people, this has been a very kind of entertaining campaign in a lot of ways, and obviously Donald Trump has something to do with that, but that also has a shelf life, and I think there is a hunger out there for...
Yeah, there is, for substance. Thank you both very much for being with us. The debate is tonight on Fox Business Network. You can also stream it, and I've also been told that WISN is carrying the debate, so you can listen to the undercard as well as the primetime debates. I didn't know that. Mm. I assume that's the case, so yeah. That's good. That's a good thing. Thanks to Craig Gilbert, political reporter, Washington Bureau Chief for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Francesca Chambers, Daily Mail's White House correspondent. Thanks to Brian Stelter. Scotty Myers is going to the debate tonight, so Scotty will check in with us tomorrow and give us all the behind-the-scenes stuff on it. Thanks for listening. The moderators, the candidates who will be facing tough scrutiny tonight, I would imagine Ben Carson will be, and perhaps Marco Rubio as well. And we'll also be looking at the state of Wisconsin.